Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Brainwaves, hear the world differently. Bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5pm.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR 855am, 3CR Digital Radio and 3cr.org.au. My name's Mark and today we're excited to catch up with Ashley Birch, the writer, star and creator of I'm Happy You're Here. Inspired by Mr. Rogers' Neighbourhood and created with an adult audience in mind, this mental health program explores topics such as addiction, depression, divorce and anxiety, featuring a cast of both puppets and human performers. It's equal parts funny and informative, and I can't wait for our listeners to learn more about it as we chat with Ashley this evening. Hello, Ashley. Thank you for joining us at Brainwaves this evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. That was such a nice intro. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I suppose, first of all, some listeners might already recognize your voice, but for those who are new to your work, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my work is usually around, I'm a writer, I'm a voice actor and an actor, and I do a lot of work in games. So having a show about mental health is maybe not as close to my brand as some people might say. I've spent a lot of my career making silly jokes on the internet, and I'm going to continue to do that with this show. But the goal is for it to also have an educational and a therapeutic benefit to it as well.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, a bit outside of your brand, but you've recently created a mental health focused show called I'm Happy You're Here. How did the idea for the show first come about? And why do you think a show like this feels particularly important at the moment?
So the idea it just came to me when I was on a walk. I think I had just gone to therapy and I was processing the session that I had had. And it occurred to me how there were all these things that I was learning in therapy that I had no idea about, had no awareness of before I started, which of course is part of the point of therapy, right? But it kind of made me realize how much support I had been lacking in my life to that point. And then I started thinking about how many people like me there probably were in the world who lack support as adults. I think at a certain age, you're sort of shoved out of the proverbial nest and the world just goes, okay, you've got it, right? You understand how to live. And I think most of us are like, not really, no. I don't know how money works. I don't know how people work. I don't know how I work. And so, yeah, there's this sort of arbitrary transition into adulthood without any sort of requisite support. Unless you have the money to pay for it or the insurance to pay for it or whatever it happens to be. So I just had this thought that I wished that more people had access to information that would help make their lives a little easier and help reduce their suffering, adults specifically. And that was sort of the seed of the idea that would become I'm Happy You're Here. And I think it's particularly needed now, because I don't know that the world is getting any less complicated or difficult. There's lots of challenging things happening globally. And then people also have always their challenges that are happening on the personal level. And I think a lot of us have not had the exposure or the help with dealing with all sorts of issues that inevitably come up when you're an adult, like divorce or addiction or losing a job or anxiety. You know, I think a lot of people get diagnosed in their 20s, 30s, or 40s with certain mental health conditions. And that can be very destabilizing and confusing. And so having something like I'm Happy You're Here, which hopefully can demystify a lot of these topics, while also not being too heavy. That was the other thing. I really wanted to make something that could be entertaining and funny as well as informative, just because I think it's the sugar that helps the medicine go down. And I wanted it to also be something that people that suffer and know that they suffer from a certain situation can send to people that maybe don't understand them as much as they wish that they did. So someone with anxiety could ideally take that video and send it to a loved one and be like, this is me. This is what happens to me. Yeah.
That's a really good answer. one of my favorite things about the show is the use of puppets. Was that always a part of the plan? And if that wasn't always the part of the plan, how did puppets end up becoming a part of the mix?
It was always a part of the plan for me, because this is meant to be something that is kind of comforting and evokes shows that, you know, millennials or Gen Xers grew up with, like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood or Sesame Street. And I also had seen, you know, I loved the show. There's an MTV show called Wonder Showzen that was a very dark adult comedy, but with all like the trappings and framework of a kid's TV show, like a Sesame Street. And that was really effective. I loved that show. I thought it was really funny. And so to me, it was like a perfect marriage of the two things, which is like, I know that you can do dark comedy with puppets in a way that's funny. And also puppets are comforting. There's something about them that's, you know, soothing, as especially as like, you know, adults that grew up with puppets. So to me, it always had to be part of the equation.
One of the puppets featured on I'm Happy You're Here is the adorable Winston. Can you tell us a little bit about Winston?
Yes, Winston is sort of my best friend in the show. He's my right-hand man. He's my sidekick, voiced wonderfully by A.G. LoCascio, who's a longtime friend of mine, also has an anxiety disorder, and is a very prolific voice actor himself. Designing and finding the voice for Winston was interesting, because again, this has always been intended to be for adults, and I wanted it to come out comforting and cozy, but not childish or saccharine. And so Winston to me is really, he's just a middle-aged guy trying his best. he's a puppet, but, you know, we have AJ use his natural voice. He doesn't put on like on a cutesy young voice. He's just a sort of like nervous guy that I feel like you've seen you either are him or you've seen him at a party that's like trying his best to like keep up with small talk, you know? And yeah, our first like long form episode is kind of centered on him having an anxiety disorder and how that functions in your brain chemically, but then also where it comes from and maybe ways that you can kind of help mitigate some of the symptoms.
And alongside Winston, we've also met the hunky puppet, Chad. Who else can viewers look forward to meeting in future episodes?
Oh, I love Chad. Chad, who is voiced by the wonderful Christopher Sabat, who people that like anime, he's been in every anime ever dubbed. My goal is to hopefully shoot a long form episode like the anxiety episode about depression later this year. And for those that don't know, chronic depression is often referred to as either clinical depression or major depression. And I just find the phrase major depression so funny, and it makes me think of like a general, like major depression reporting for duty. So major depression makes an appearance. and he teaches us all about major depression, and he's kind of an asshole.
The production quality is incredibly high, and for something that people can just watch for free, you must have a very talented team behind you. Would you like to tell us, you've sort of mentioned a couple of the voice actors, would you like to tell us about some of the other people working with you and what they bring to the show?
Yes, I would love to. So the anxiety episode, when we were first figuring out the show, we weren't sure, kind of shooting it sort of like in mind as a pilot, and maybe if it blew up on YouTube that we could then try to maybe find a home that could pay for it more consistently, and that didn't happen. So we're, you know, it has a very healthy amount of views, but I think this is going to be something that grows more steadily over time. And so we've kind of gone more of like a crowdfunding route with it. We have a Patreon, and also we partnered with a 501c3, so you can give tax deductible donations to the show. But the whole first episode was funded by Rena Palencia, who's a dear friend of mine, and her husband, Paul Wingo, who are wonderful. Rena also wrote all the music, and she voices a lot of the puppets. She's the amygdala, for example, in the anxiety episode, which is one of my favorite, one of my favorite roles of hers. So without her, this wouldn't exist at all. They just funded it because they believe in helping their friends create meaningful art projects. So they're a huge part of it. BJ Geyer, who is our puppet fabricator, he built all the puppets based on Han Seng, who was our, he did all the animated backgrounds and then also all the designs for all the puppets. So he is the reason Winston looks as gosh darn cute as he does in concert with BJ's efforts. And then Tracy Ip, our producer, who is just a hero. And again, none of this would exist without her because she's just so organized and so amazing. And shooting with puppets is like a whole logistical puzzle to solve, because you have to hide puppeteers and you have to be aware of how long puppeteers are holding their arms in a certain position. And there's also you know, they have to have monitors so they can see what they're doing. And then there's also, you know, they don't necessarily memorize. They often will just like cold read like voice actors do and puppeteer alongside. So there are all these different like moving parts of puppets that Tracy figures out, which is amazing. I brought on board more recently to help with Patreon. And also he's an amazing audio designer, Josh Sterling. And then Jonathan Denmark, who is our set designer, who designed the set for Anxiety. And then he also designed the set that we use for our mini series, which is one that's called I'm Scared of Therapy, which is all about therapy. And then I Can't Meditate, which is all about meditation. I've been so lucky, and I'm so grateful for all the folks that have come together to make this show what it is, because it really is like, it's a labor of love for all of us. And it really is just an attempt to make the world a little less difficult, you know?
And it paid off because it looks fantastic. I was just sort of blown away when I first watched that first episode. How did you first make contact with the puppeteers involved in the project? Were you familiar with them beforehand, or did you sort of seek them out?
I actually was connected to them because of AJ LoCascio, who plays Winston. I don't know why he knows so many puppeteers, but he knows a lot of puppeteers. And so he was also, apart from just being the voice of Winston, he was a big reason why I decided to make this independently, because I tried selling it. I'd written the script and I'd had producers attached. I'd had a celebrity attached to host it. I really thought it was going to sell. And I took it kind of all over the place, and people said that they just didn't understand how they were going to program it. They didn't know how they were going to market it. They didn't, whatever. And it's just something that's always stuck in my craw. I could never get rid of it. I couldn't let it go. And I was having lunch with AJ at some point, and he was like, you could just make it yourself, even if it's just cardboard and popsicle sticks. And he was like, I know all these puppeteers I could introduce you to. And so he connected me with BJ, who is wonderful, just a delightful human. And then BJ, of course, knows all of the other puppeteers you could ever possibly hope to know. And so, that was sort of just very, very easy. That was like the least difficult part, honestly, because AJ just made that connection.
You've been performing, acting, and creating for a long time now. What lessons from your career did you carry into this project?
I think the biggest lesson I brought in was how important collaboration is. I've showrun and I've worked in writers' rooms and I've been on sets, and the people that I've gotten to work with are so talented and so good at what they do that it's a disservice to me and to the project to micromanage. It's just not worth it. Like, you hire the people that you hire for a reason and you trust them. And usually what ends up happening is, if you've hired well, that they'll give you something amazing. And so that was sort of what I came into this project with, which is, I really want, like, there were a couple of times, Matt Arnold and Freddie Wong directed the anxiety episode, and you might know them from Rocket Jump and Dungeons and Daddies, and they're directing their own features now and stuff. And, Matt would often be like, well, this is your baby, we don't want to drop it, kind of thing. I'm like, but I also asked you guys to do this for a reason, and I'd love your feedback. And it's a mix of, like, I'll be able to say if something isn't right, or if I have a very strong opinion, but I don't want this to just be my thing. I want the feedback and the interest and the ideas from everyone that is working on it. And so, that kind of idea of having like a physical element in a space and then have that blend with the animated background and have lighting kind of marry the two elements was Freddie and Matt's idea. So like in the park, in the anxiety episode, we're sitting on a bench and the background is an illustrated image, but we set the lighting. We had Hans draw the image with directional lighting, and then we matched that lighting on set so that the effect is, even though we're 3D and we're sitting on a 3D object, we feel like we're in the space because they did that really clever thing with lighting, like that kind of makes it feel like everything is of one piece. And I never would have been able to come up with that. I just wouldn't have thought of that. And so that's the big thing to me, is like, it's a marriage of having a vision and knowing what you want, but not being so tied to it that you can't acknowledge and bring in good ideas when they're presented.
And alongside your professional work, you also, as you mentioned earlier, you also live with an anxiety disorder. What has that experience taught you, and how has it shaped the way you approach the show?
Man, what hasn't it taught me almost? I mean, I've had anxiety for my whole life, and I think the main thing it's taught me is empathy, because of how challenging it is for me sometimes. And there is a certain amount of shame that can come with having invisible disorders. Whenever I would tell someone that I had an anxiety disorder, they'd be very surprised, because I can present and have learned how to present as very put together and confident and articulate. And so it's just this sort of thing of, and I would be surprised by their surprise, because in my head, it's like, there's like a war zone happening or whatever, and they're seeing someone very like sort of sturdy. So it helped. It taught me how everyone's internal life is quite different than how they present. But the main thing it also taught me through going to therapy and all those sorts of things is, like, how do I like to be spoken to about this topic? How do I like to think about it? How do I like to process it? How do I like discussing it in therapy? And that sort of helped me arrive at the tone of I'm happy you're here, because it's very much my humor, but also there was a time and a place for me to like sob in therapy, right? But sometimes you feel the most seen also when you can make a joke about it or laugh about it. Or if like my therapist would say something that would make me laugh, it's disarming. And also there can be a lot of clarity in humor. Like a great stand-up really makes you realize something true about the world, right? So I think, you know, not just being a, what is that phrase? It's like, I'm not just the owner, I'm also a member or whatever. Like having that perspective, and being someone that does struggle with mental health issues has really helped me understand, you know, it really is just from the viewpoint of like, how would I want to be talked to about this? And assuming that other people would feel the same.
And some people don't immediately recognize what they're experiencing is related to a mental health struggle, while others might identify it more quickly. How did you come to realize that anxiety was at the heart of what you were experiencing, you know, when you were sort of having those struggles?
Therapy, honestly. I mean, I had sort of self-diagnosed myself with OCD at a much younger age because I was having really bad intrusive thoughts. So I went to therapy in my early 20s, and I kind of was like, I guess I have OCD, but that's probably it. And then, which is funny to think about now, because so obviously it wasn't just it. But it was through the process of therapy and learning about not just anxiety disorder, but attachment theory and all other sorts of concepts like that, that I found A, that I had that disorder, and B, that framework was helpful for me. Some people don't like getting diagnoses, you know, they don't like the label. For me, it helped me frame it like any other physical malady. You know, when you have the flu, you have to take this kind of medicine. When you have an anxiety disorder, you have to do this kind of thing. So yeah, it really was therapy that helped give me the framework.
And yeah, what has your journey been like exploring your anxiety and trying different therapies and figuring out what actually works for you personally?
I've had to accept that there is not a silver bullet for me, and that as I age and as I change, I will also have to change the way that I deal with my anxiety. Like the therapist that I first saw, I saw him for a very long time, and he was a wonderful therapist, and he was perfect for me for the amount of time that I was seeing him. And then at a certain point, I realized I needed a different type of therapy, and I started doing EMDR. And that opened up a whole path of healing that I didn't even know that I had needed, you know, 5 years prior. I switch what kinds of meditations I do, because sometimes I really respond to TM, transcendental meditation, and other times I need a guided meditation because I need someone to like walk me, like hold my hand, walk me through a meditation. So I think I've had, you know, I think for a while when I was in my 20s, I was hoping that I would just figure out the thing that would quote unquote cure me. And what I realized for myself is that I'm going to be managing this thing until I die, probably. So I can be in acceptance of that and add more tools to my toolbox, or I can kind of, you know, kick and scream and continue to be anxious. And what I have found in being in acceptance of the fact that like I need help, and sometimes I need a lot of help, is that it gets better. I have lots of moments of serenity or calm, or I can talk myself off a ledge, or I can interrupt an anxious spiral. I have choices now that I didn't really have before. And that has kind of come with the acceptance of who I am, rather than being like, I don't want to be anxious and I have to change this so I'm not anxious anymore. is being like, okay, yeah, I have an anxiety disorder and there's stuff I can do to help it. And it's not about like extinguishing that or somehow beating it. It's managing it. And I can manage it quite well these days, actually. And then sometimes they're hard, but it's overall, it's an upward trajectory. And it's nonlinear. You know, my therapist used to do this thing of like a line graph where it's always going up. Sometimes it dips, but then it comes back up and it's always going up to that right corner. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to like have a spike down every so often. So I think that's been a big thing for me, is like letting go of this idea that I will be healed and then what? That's the other thing. And then what? Like, and then I just am a monk. I don't know that, it's not much on the other side of just being enlightened, as far as I can tell. I guess just like bliss, but who needs that?
Not in this world. Maybe some fleeting moments of bliss is nice though. So the first episode of I'm Happy You're Here focuses on anxiety. Were some of the scenarios presented in that episode inspired by your own lived experience?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I picked the conversation at the party because I feel like that's one of the most relatable ones probably. But yeah, I have my social anxiety can be really bad. And yeah, it can feel like you're being chased by a predator when really you're just kind of fumbling through a sentence with some people that you don't really know at like your friend's birthday party. My dad did not leave to go get puppet cigarettes. That was made up. That was a joke. But but yeah, I tried to make it, I tried to pull from, you know, the sort of headlines of my life while trying to find instances that I thought could be like most relatable to others.
And even though the show is very funny and features puppets, which might seem a little bit silly, but there's a real responsibility that comes with talking about mental health. How do you make sure the information you share is accurate and not inadvertently harming people?
Yeah, so that was a big thing for all of us involved. So everything that we put out, we run by licensed therapists before we do. So I kind of have like a list of people that I bother. and I just get feedback from them about like, is this accurate? You know, is this phrasing correct? Is there anything that I missed? Is there anything you think I should take out? And I usually run it by at least three people, at least three different therapists before we film anything. Because yeah, especially with stuff related to how the brain works, anything related to like just any sort of mental health topic, unless, you know, in our interview series, it's people speaking from their own experience. So I trust and hope that viewers know that like they're not trying to endorse or tell anyone what to do. They're just talking about how they experienced the situation that they're coming from. But yeah, if there's anything like the anxiety episode, or especially anxiety and I'm scared of therapy, I made sure to run that through many filters of therapists before putting it out.
And mental health specialist Beth May appears in the first episode. What's their background and how did they become involved with the show?
Oh, Beth and I have just been friends for many years, and Beth suffers from bipolar disorder. She's done a lot of work with NAMI around that. She's very open about it. And she is also on Dungeons and Daddies with Matt and Freddie. And I wanted someone who, you know, I think would appreciate what the show was trying to do. And also, it's just funny in her own right. So Beth was the obvious choice.
And one of the skills featured in the show about anxiety is the 4-7-8 breathing technique, which is taught in the form of a song. For anyone unfamiliar with the 4-7-8 technique, what is it and how has it helped you?
Yeah, so 4-7-8 breathing is something that I learned from my therapist. And the idea is that there is a song for it, so it's easy to remember. But you breathe in for 4 counts, you hold your breath for 7, and then you release for 8. And you just do that as many times as you need to sort of regulate your nervous system. And it's sort of a way of tricking your brain and your amygdala, which is your fear response, into knowing that you are physically safe. Because when we get into our sympathetic nervous system, there's that like that sort of like labored, quick breathing that can happen. And so disrupting that by doing deliberately slow breath, that holding at the top and releasing slowly, can sort of, not trick, because you are physically safe, but remind your amygdala, I'm not actually in physical danger. Nothing's chasing me. It's just my brain being like my brain. And so I do it all the time. Often if I have like, I can feel anxious in my body, if my, you know, somatically, if I feel kind of tingly or agitated, that's a thing that I will kind of do subtly. Even if I'm, you know, at the grocery store, if I'm in a meeting, I can kind of do it, you know, even when I'm out and about, without people really noticing that. And it can be a really good way of regulating my nervous system.
I think it's a really good technique. I use it, and learning it from your show was quite unusual. Have you ever picked up a mental health skill from somewhere unusual or unexpected?
Oh, interesting. I was speaking to a friend who told me that she names her negative voices different names. I think one of them's like Bernice or something. So if it's going and that narrative is going in her head, if it's like kind of berating her, she'll be like, that's enough, Bernice. And she'll literally say it out loud, which I thought was very charming.
I've been, yeah, particularly loving the series about therapy and how to find the right therapist. It's something that doesn't really get talked about enough, I think. It can be a pretty confronting task to someone who's never had to choose a therapist. What inspired you to create that series of shorts?
For exactly that reason. I think admitting or being interested in therapy is hard enough. Like, even just that step is difficult. And if people are anything like me, if there's something I don't want to do, and then getting to do it, like the process to getting to the place where I'm doing the thing is hard, I'm not going to do it. Like, I already don't want to go to therapy. Now you're telling me I have to do a bunch of bullshit I don't want to do in order to do a thing I already don't want to do. So that was sort of the impetus for me, which is that like therapy has helped me so much. I know it's intimidating and I know it's hard because I went through the same thing when I first started. There's all sorts of feelings around it. And so the goal with that series is like, basically, how can we remove as many roadblocks as we can, you know, with what resources we have, so that people that are possibly pursuing this for themselves feel a little less scared and a little less alone and a little less overwhelmed. It's also born of speaking anecdotally to people who have told me about their therapists. And I'm like, I don't think you should see that person anymore. Like, I had a roommate whose therapist would just tell her what she was doing wrong all the time. And I was like, that's not what therapists are supposed to do. So there's a lot of misconceptions about what therapy is or what it's like. And then also it can be very intimidating and overwhelming trying to find one. And so, yeah, to me, I was like, it's this thing of like, what would I have wanted to have been able to watch when I was first thinking about, you know, getting into therapy? What would have helped me be a little less afraid? And what's amazing is that there have been comments where people are like, I was on the fence and now I'm like seeing my therapist for the first time because of these videos. And that's very, very gratifying to see stuff like that.
And that's why I think it's a really important show right now. What topics can viewers expect to see explored in future episodes of I'm Happy You're Here?
Yeah. So like I mentioned earlier, the next long form one I've written the script is about depression. After that, I'd really love to do an episode about ADHD, bipolar, autism, and then stuff like, you know, divorce, postpartum, just things that adults deal with that are hard to talk about, that we, you know, I think there's all, you know, a whole host of things even just around being pregnant, you know, what is it like having a miscarriage? What is it like, you know, your body changing, all the sorts of stuff, body dysmorphia. There's just like, unfortunately, endless things that you can talk about, and that people need help around. And so there's a very long list, but yeah, I think after depression, I would love to do an episode about ADHD, but I would probably strong arm my husband into writing because he has ADHD and he's very funny.
In the anxiety episode, there's a flow chart of everything that you feel could possibly go wrong for you, including the fear of being cancelled. What do you think you would most likely be cancelled for?
Probably something dumb that I did in a sketch show when I was a teenager, or it was a genuine fear I had actually going into the anxiety episode, that I, even though I had like spoken to therapists about it, and even though I had gotten like sign off from subject matter experts, that there would be people in the comments that are like, this is bullshit. You have no idea what you're talking about, da, 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 which hasn't happened, but I have an anxiety disorder. So I was afraid of that going in.
So our listeners will have to check out the episode to understand what this question means, but can fans look forward to a full episode of Love is a Highway at some point down the track?
Oh my God. If we get to a place where we can consistently make long form episodes, I would love for Love is a Highway to be like a running, a running gag and a running show.
So would
it's
I.
Such a dumb, it's such a dumb joke. It's one of my favorite jokes of the series. Yeah, it's so dumb. I love it.
An important question. Who is your favorite Muppet and why?
Ooh. That's a hard one. I mean, I love Pepe the Prawn. He's so funny. So maybe Pepe.
And last question. Finally, where can people watch I'm Happy You're Here? Sign up for the Patreon or discover more about your work and ongoing things that are happening with the show?
Yeah, so you can find the show at just search I'm Happy You're Here on YouTube, or you can go to ihyh.org, which is our website. And if you wanted to support the show, you can go to ihyh.org/Patreon and become a patron. Yeah.
And we will include those links on the podcast version of the show for people to check out. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us at Brainwaves this evening, Ashley. I hope that, I can't wait for our listeners to check out the show, for the ones that haven't checked it out. And yeah, I look forward to more upcoming episodes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR. You can find more of our shows on the 3CR website, which is 3cr.org.au, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to send us any suggestions you might have for shows at brainwaves@wellways.org. And thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back next Wednesday at 5 p.m. for another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.